Good morning. I'm Greg Hughes on the right.
And I'm Jim DeBacchus on the left.
And I'm Natalie Gochner, and you're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle, a lively and informative conversation about politics and current issues facing the state of Utah. Today, we'll discuss throwing away school lunches, insensitive tweets, and Speaker Lockhart's education proposal. But first, this news.
This is Jim DeBacchus on the left.
And Greg Hughes on the right.
And I'm Natalie Gochner in the political center. And this is Both Sides of the Aisle. Today, we're going to talk about some fun things, but I'm going to start out by talking about something really sad. It was a really bad thing that happened up at Uinta Elementary School, Salt Lake City School District. A lot of kids denied lunches for not having up-to-date, you know, payments in their lunch accounts. Maybe even some computer problems contributed to it. School fighting, infighting, who's responsible, parents enraged. I don't know if this is a partisan issue, but what's next? What do we do here? I mean, this got all the way to national TV, Today Show type coverage. Not good for our state, Greg.
You know what? It is. It's a sad episode, but I'll tell you, it's one that happens, I think, more than we understand. It was deja vu for me. I was a fourth grader. My mom's a single mom. I need my lunch money. She doesn't have it. I went a few days without paying. I had a lunch lady say to me, if you don't come tomorrow with your money and pay up, you're not going to be able to eat lunch. I stressed the whole next day because I didn't have the lunch money. Got up to the line, didn't know what to do. You smell the food. You want to eat lunch. I got my tray, went to the cashier, and I just didn't know what to do. So I put a different name on that sheet. I just made it up. I just made up the name. I got my tray.
Conservative confession occurring.
Fourth grade, man. I'm just trying to make my way. I took my tray, went to there, and I start eating as fast as I can. And I look, and here she comes.
Wow.
I did not trick this woman, okay? And she stands behind me, which signals to me to eat faster. And then she said, why did you put a fake name on that my paper? And I said, because I want my lunch. And I went to the principal's office. I did not have state senators like my friend Jim DeBacchus saving the day, shaming them for that episode. But I felt a little empathy for those students.
Yeah.
So I think that happens. It's a sad deal. And I don't know, when you look at, when you hear in the aftermath how they handled it, clearly that needs to be handled better. Those parents are responsible. Those children are, it is not their decision to come without lunch money.
Greg, we see how resourceful you are.
Thank you.
Learn and, you know, use in politics. Jim, what's your take on this? I mean, should somebody lose their job over this? Is this something that you just forgive and move on and make the corrections?
You know, Uinta's in my district, so that happened, I believe, on Wednesday. On Thursday, I went to have lunch at Uinta. I think a little bit to the horror of...
Did you pay?
I went with Todd Weiler, the senator, and he didn't have $3. So I ended up having to pay for Weiler as well. Which is nothing new. And I called a group of activists and I said, you know, this is your moment. Here's what I want you to do. Today, it has to be today, Friday. You need to go there to the epitome of free lunches. There is no more free lunches anywhere on the planet than in the Utah legislature. Right, Greg? How many free lunches could we have every day?
There's a few, you know,
there's
little
everybody.
Functions going on. That you.
So I said, here's what I want you to do. I want you to grab a trash can, and then I want you to grab a bunch of cameras, and I want you to go up to some senators, and I want you to say hi, smile, grab their food, and then dump it and watch what happens. Probably wouldn't affect them because they know they can go back to the trough or to another trough.
You are an instigator, sir. I can't believe you are encouraging this.
I think that...
Hey, little thief, what are you talking about?
I think the biggest problem with this is it's just a distraction from really the important things that we should be talking about in education. Unfortunately.
No, I mean, I don't think it's a distraction to this extent, Natalie. You cannot... If you're a first, second, third, fifth, sixth grader and you're hungry... You cannot spend the afternoon thinking about learning anything.
Yeah.
You know, this is a serious issue, and it happens in every single school district and virtually every school. And some of my colleagues kept saying, well, you know, these were not the poor people. These were not the really poor children because they get the free lunch. These are the kids whose parents should be paying and they're on a card. You know what? Here's what the policy ought to be and will be, I think, as a result of this incident. The policy will be there will not be another Greg Hughes. No kid in a Utah school ever, no matter what. If it's a Huntsman kid, no kid is standing in that line and not served, and not served with the same food everybody else is getting. None of this, well, you're second class, we're going to give you a thing of juice
peanut
and a banana.
Butter and jelly.
So that's the way it is now, and it happens to thousands of kids regularly. So we have a policy, and we need a policy, and I think we're going to get this, that says, you know what, let the bureaucrats go after it. After the fact, if they need to go get people's cars or follow them to work or sell their houses or do whatever, that's fine. But no Utah kid ever, 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 ever is not served lunch in a Utah school. That's basic rule number one for education.
Greg, we just heard quite a long appeal there. What do you think?
Well, I'm going to just go back into my own experience. Do this as well, Jim. Don't let the free lunch tickets be a different color than the normal tickets, because I refused free lunch because I didn't want to have
different
a ticket
color.
Of a different color than my peers. And so I agree, but let's be sensitive about how we segregate those who may receive their lunch for free versus those who are paying as well. So be sensitive of that.
Well, we agree on that pretty much.
Well, then, but speaking as a representative of the political center, I want to just add, wouldn't it be nice if we worried this much and gave this much time to all the people that aren't able to read in third grade? You know, I mean, you know, we put a lot of time into this.
I would argue, Natalie, we are putting
let's do it
Herculean effort.
I can't wait to talk about it. In fact, we're going to talk about that in our next segment. But
I can't
but
wait.
Before we do that, let's talk about the infamous tweet.
Oh yes,
we've had the Twitter world lit up this week. Wayne Niederhauser, president of the Senate, sends out a tweet. An insensitive tweet. It was so insensitive that it resulted in some sensitivity training being required for legislators.
Yes.
Apparently, he, you know, in response to something about, using open bathrooms, he said, "Now switching your gender identity? Just can't keep up with you. You're a new man, woman." That was the content of the tweet.
It started as a lot of things start that are not good for the state in the House. so the
over with the cockroaches, Greg.
The president of the Senate did respond, but it all started with a bad tweet in by a House member.
Representative Andrig was complaining that the men's bathroom was full, and he's admitted since that it was insensitive, but he said he was strongly considering a gender identifying change. To be able to use the open women's room and probably just an off-the-cuff statement. I do want to say, though, that President Niederhauser was not the respondent of his Twitter account. This was his intern who, President Niederhauser, because he is not a technology native and doesn't do this regularly but would like to be in better communication with the public, had asked his intern to go ahead and communicate through Twitter. But this wasn't what he was talking about. This wasn't kind of the idea.
Yeah, yeah.
Hopefully, we all have interns, and hopefully those interns exercise discretion. It didn't happen here. So it did create a big old kerfuffle.
Jim, you going to let the senator off the hook that easily?
Yes.
Intern problem.
President Niederhauser, what do you have to say about the president?
The issue for me is much less the tweets. Look, as a guy who tweets occasionally or hits that send button and sometimes reads it and go, oh man, I wish I hadn't done that. I get that. Mm-hmm. What is completely insensitive and almost unforgivable is Representative Kennedy's. And I think it does not come out of antipathy. I think it comes out of complete ignorance. I doubt Representative Kennedy has ever met a transgender child, because to put into legislation this kind of astonishing bullying as Representative Kennedy's bill would do, it seems completely incapable of somebody who really understands what the situation is. So I hope that the good side of this opportunity will be Representative Kennedy can sit down with some parents with transgendered children, with some children themselves, and he can begin to understand that this is a real issue for real live children. It is a desperately difficult situation, and to make weird legislation, not knowing anything about what's going on, is supremely insensitive.
Concerning to you. Greg, close us out
here. Just that bill has to do with making it a penalty by law if you're a male and you go into a female bathroom and vice versa. The good thing about the Twitter issue is that there was a sensitivity training, or rather an open dialogue, and people were able to express their apologies as well as learn, get a better perspective.
And you attended some sensitivity training?
Well, I did not. I don't need to, Natalie. Thank you very
okay.
much. But
and
I've
Jim,
heard nothing but good things.
No.
Nothing but good things. Nothing but good things and positive reactions from the experience. So I think there's a silver lining in that experience.
That's great. In our next segment, we'll talk about Speaker Lockhart and her education proposal. Join us. I'm Natalie Gochner. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm joined on the left by Jim DeBacchus. Jim, say hello.
Hello.
And on the right by State Representative Greg Hughes.
Good morning, Natalie.
I want to start off this second segment by just reflecting for a minute about reports in local news outlets this week about Utah being the fourth most conservative state. I mean, what's the first thing that came to your mind, Greg?
Who are the other three that would be more conservative than us? I'm offended.
He's got a lot of friends in this country.
That's
you know?
Exactly right. We are number one. There's no one will convince me otherwise.
So they have Wyoming, Mississippi, Idaho, more conservative than we are. But, Jim, they also mentioned that there's a 31% gap between the percent that are Republican and the percent Democrat. How do you get anything done and represent the left in this state?
Clearly a bad poll. You know, Utahns are not... They're reasonable. They're conservative, but it's not this kind of Tea Party crazy out there kind of conservatism. I mean, the legislature's full of them, but you talk to normal Utahns, you got a better way, you roll up your sleeves, you got a plan. They're listening to
you. He's making a pitch for the
you.
Middle here. I'm you getting know, the friend here.
They're much more... All right, let's solve the real problem here.
I got to tell you, these reasonable people are picking supermajorities of Republicans. I couldn't agree more with Jim. I think he's exactly right. These reasonable, roll up your sleeves, get it done, Utahns are saying, hey, we're a Republican state. Of those states you named, it is clear that not only is Utah, it should be the most conservative, it's absolutely the best one of those states to live in.
You got it. Well, so we have a Republican Speaker of the House who... You know, she's making some waves, showing her assertiveness this session, started right at the get-go. But she unveils this this really far-reaching proposal to invest, you know, $300 to $400 million in Utah schools with a focus on technology. And it's led some of the Democrats on the Hill. I saw a quote from Representative Briscoe where he said, you know, it's not about the money, it's how you spend it, which sounded like something that Republicans say. And he makes the point that, you know, if you have $300 million to put towards education, it might not be towards iPads.
Well,
please,
let me jump
Greg,
in. I'm
please.
Sorry. The number is probably less than $300 million. But that's still an incredibly large number when you talk about the budgets and what the budgets look like right now. It was funny. We had a press availability press conference in the speaker's office. And as we're talking to the press about this very topic about, it's called one-to-one. It is delivering curriculum and education to students through tablets, through technology, so that you, instead of a backpack full of heavy books, you're going to have your textbooks. You're going to have ways to take tests on a tablet instead of the traditional method. As we're talking about this issue in this press conference, there isn't a single reporter who doesn't have a laptop or some electronic technological device that they're using. There are no notepads.
They didn't have their little skinny pads.
There isn't any shorthand going on. How in the world, if the technology immigrants that we are, or in my case, the refugee, have completely immersed themselves in technology to do their jobs better, are handing today in 2014 a pencil to a student and saying, here's a piece of paper, let's get rid of your iPads, your technology that you've grown up around and know nothing else, but here's a pencil, kid, go to work. Come on, we know this is not a matter of if, but when. I salute the speaker for thinking big and getting on with it. We need to do this. We should have done it before, and it's fun to be on something that's transformational and is going to make a true difference.
Jim, do you see this as a wise investment? How's this being received over in Senate land?
Well, you know, this is over in the where all the cockroaches are, way over in that house, and I haven't even seen it. This is the first I've heard of it. And I say cockroach with complete affection. There's just so many of them in that place, and it's out of control. They're all talking all the time. They're crawling all over the desk. The Senate is very diplomatic. It's very reasonable.
It's a funeral home. It really is. It's better than a cockroach.
Dearly beloved. Okay, so but let's get to the point here. Is this ongoing $300 million, or is this
it's
like a one-time shot?
It's less than $300 million. There will be some one-time dollars for infrastructure, but there is a
how much
large
is continuing?
Ongoing component. well over 100 million will be ongoing, maybe 150 million. I'm shooting from the hip here. I can't give you the straight numbers for exactly, but you have to have a number that is ongoing so you can signal to these districts that this isn't a flash in the pan, one-year idea. This is a serious commitment to transition, and districts would have to come in. They would have to bring in, and bring flesh to the game and be willing to do it as well. But you have to have a process where the state is committed financially so that this transition can happen. That is going to be a big number, Jim, but I'm telling you, we're on the side of angels here.
I got to hand it to the right for putting forward the willingness to spend money on education in a bold way. But I do ask, would this money be better spent on teacher quality? Would this money be spent better on class size?
Oh, no, let's try this giant experiment and see what happens.
We have this Senator Osmond issue where, to get more money in school, he wants fewer days.
So I was on the floor today, and Senator Osmond stood up. And in fairness, I had to say, the vote ended up to be 27-2 with me on the losing side. So, that's where I usually
31% gap, Jim.
Exactly. Well, that's even more than 31%. So the Osmond proposal is simple. Now, remember, this is a senator who said school shouldn't be mandatory. And now where does that lead to? 2008, we had $70 million ongoing to give to our teachers, to prepare them on how to teach with computers and laptops. It was a professional courtesy to people who spent a lot of time in college getting ready, getting their certificates, are dedicated. They got preparation time. Occasionally they got a magazine. We treated them like professionals. Well, 2009 stripped that out completely. Not 1 ounce of preparation time, not 1 ounce of professional training. So now, finally, years later, instead of spending this $100 million or $300 million on respecting our teachers, what have we come up with? China, we have 250 days a year of kids in classrooms. North Korea, 280. Japan, 300 days. Utah's plan, how are we going to treat our professionals? We're going to lower from 281 days of classroom instructions. We're going to lower it by 7 days. And then we're going to give the teachers the day off because it saves money and it gets kids out of the... Give me a break. That's our
Greg
solution.
Is busting out of his seatbelt right now.
They're wasting the last 7 days anyway, Jim. We're going to end on a good note. We're going to keep working to the last day. We're going to give them the 7 days. They were sitting around doing nothing as... time off, but also you need to know that the speaker's plan and Representative Gibson's bill has probably $45 million in the professional development. If you're going to do this implementation and you are going to introduce these tablets in delivering of education, there is within that bill professional development money, so you're going to love it even more.
Yeah.
This bill.
I got to hand it to the speaker for being on the cutting edge here, doing things that we know where the world's headed, skate to where the puck's going to be kind of thinking.
Thank you very much. I love that.
Love that
Wayne
Super
Gretzky.
Bowl.
That was Wayne Gretzky
that was
said
Bobby
that.
Orr. That's Bobby Orr said that.
All right.
But more to come. I mean, we still have revenue estimates, final revenue estimates. We won't see those till the last week in February. I guess the speaker said she's willing to phase this in. But she'll carry a lot of power on this. And if she gets more money to education, I think that will be an overall good thing.
Go big or go home. I love it. I love it.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Natalie Gochner in the Political Center. I'm joined on the left by Senator Jim DeBacchus and on the right by Representative Greg Hughes. Another issue I wanted to just mention briefly, Sochi Olympics, right around the corner, new poll out that shows that if Utahns had the chance, 82% said that we should bid again. The 2022 games are off the table. USOC is not going to submit a bid, but the 2026 games may be available. Greg, should we do this?
Absolutely.
Jim,
what a wonderful
should we do
time.
This?
I'm there.
Okay.
And you know what?
We've got agreement, and the Political Center's there.
And Mitt doesn't have a lot to do.
Hey,
do that.
Let's bring him back. Actually, he's going to run again, and this time he'll win. So maybe as president.
I'll tell you, if we do host the games, it would be good if we had something like SB 100 passed. That would be a statewide non-discrimination ordinance that says in this state, discrimination is wrong.
I've heard about this
wrong.
Bill. I've heard a little bit about this
and,
bill.
And Greg, where do you see this breaking down? And let's have Jim add in.
Well, I think there's a big-time attempt to make the way the legislature is addressing or not addressing this bill to look like it's being inspired from hate or bigotry. Let me set the record straight. There are a number of bills that have been filed drafting that has happened that look at religious liberties, that look at anti-discrimination. There are what we're doing, because we have an appeal of our Constitution going probably to the Supreme Court, is it is a standing down on this topic. There are a lot of people that are very emotional about this issue that, look, I'm not even arguing we shouldn't have this debate. But in the season where we are defending this, our Constitution, we believe that it is best not to have these things coming up while we're defending the state's Constitution.
Crazy idea. If that's the reason, would you sign a petition that says you do it next time, next session?
Look, once we get past this appeal, let me tell you this. we have to have a broader discussion, because I heard at the State of the State our governor say that we need to be inclusive. We cannot accept or tolerate bigotry.
Didn't he get a standing ovation on that?
And he got a standing ovation from this legislature. And if that doesn't signal that we want to do right by Utahns, I don't know what would.
Okay, Jim. Is the seatbelt on?
72%. Dan Jones, Deseret News. People in the state believe in non-discrimination. It's offensive to have the legislature crawl under the rock of, we're not going to do anything. What about the last six sessions? You know, what was the excuse then? This is a smokescreen because they're gutless and they are simply trying to pander to the right wing that controls the Republican Party instead of the vast majority of this state. And let me remind everyone what we're talking about here. No, we can't do it because of the 10th Circuit and the appeal. Well, the appeal is for gay marriage. This is for civil rights. This is for equal protection, anti-discrimination in housing and in employment. It has nothing to do with marriage, other than the legislature simply wants to get out of this because they're nervous about the right wing with their party. It's gutless.
The political center has really been at a really pragmatic point that it's not helpful to have a what we would call a patchwork quilt of non-discrimination ordinances all around the state. You're R.C. Willie. You have locations in multiple cities. Everyone has a different ordinance on this. You have to comply with it in different settings. Not helpful to business. Greg, you're a business guy. You get that.
Absolutely. Let me tell you what some of the concern, and I'm not going to say that these are the legal concerns that are necessarily true, Jim, but there is a fear or a worry that if you begin to talk about not anti-discrimination based on sexual orientation, that once you memorialize or talk about these things in statute, it becomes harder to say, well, we want to defend and talk about and single out traditional marriage once you've created by statute a class. And so we would love to see the Supreme Court just finally give us some guidance on this. Are we completely wrong? Was it okay for New York, because they were on states' rights, to define marriage any way they'd like, but Utah should not? I mean, we just got to get those answers.
Jim,
and then
I know
I think
you have
we'll
a lot of respect
issues.
For our Attorney General, Sean Reyes. If he's asking the legislature to stand down, is that not good enough reason?
You know, we are. How many federal land lawsuits do we have now? How many millions of dollars do we spend? And how many courts are we in? And yet I don't hear that same cry to Mike Noel and to a lot of the colleagues over there, you better be quiet about federal land issues. It's just be quiet about gay issues, and it has nothing to do with a court case. That is a smokescreen to cover a lack of political courage.
Did you like what the governor said in his State of the State? Was that a bold move?
We wrote what the governor said.
Brandy and I met with the governor.
And we had a great time, except there was one sentence after what the governor said that he crossed out, or that Derek crossed out, or somebody that said, and because of that, I support Senator Urquhart's Senate Bill 100. So that didn't happen.
Listen,
look, we're making
a
move.
Very quickly, Greg, we'll go to our gripes next.
It cuts both ways. Just know, Jim, that there are a lot of religious liberty bills. There were bills that you would have hated that have had that are were standing down on as well. That should be good news to you, that the reaction of some from this Judge Shelby's decision, we are not going to let that take the oxygen out of the room and push those bills either. There has been a more moderated, calmer tone.
Sounds like this is going to continue. Time for us to talk about our weekly gripes. I'll jump in first by just saying that I saw a news report about a bill. Our state transportation director, Carlos Braceros, coming out in favor of it, where we're going to try and go to more segments in our state that have 80 mile per hour speed limits. It would match Texas. So it would be Texas and Utah out there as kind of the fastest highway states. And Carlos said this quote. He said, "We are trying to match behavior." And I thought to myself, since when do you write legislation to match behavior? I got 16, 17, 18-year-olds that have driven down to St. George. I don't want them going 80 miles per hour. That's my gripe.
Mine has to do with a bill which probably isn't going to make it out of committee. It is a great bill, and I'm expecting Greg to co-sponsor it in the House. It would say if legislators want to collect a paycheck, they have to spend 5 hours in a public school in a classroom, not bloviating, but only working with children. I'll tell you, if they did that, it would change everything about how education money is funded.
Greg, your gripe.
My gripe? I guess I'm going to go to one of the topics we addressed at the beginning of the program. My gripe of the week, it truly is the school lunch debacle. I have been frustrated with Salt Lake School District for some time. I think that there is a leadership problem there. I think that this should have never happened the way it did. I believe the stories that are coming out of that district that this was a top-down decision, not one within that lunchroom that was made this way. And I'd like to see some changes. I'd like to see the leadership there step up and change the culture that's happening there. That's my gripe.
Very good. You've been listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. The program is produced by Elizabeth Dee and Tyler Ford. We hope you've enjoyed the conversation. Thanks for listening.